D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service, and proudly presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL Insider, presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, I want to start on a somber note. It was during our show yesterday that the news was announced that Ray Shiro had died at the age of 62. Of course, Ray Shiro began his NHL front office career here in Nashville for nearly a decade as an assistant GM before moving on to the Pittsburgh Penguins. It really did come out of left field for all of us. Were you as surprised by this news as we were? And what do you think Ray Shiro's legacy in the game is going to be?
Yes, I was. He had been ill, but he kept it pretty quiet. I don't think there were a lot of people who knew about it. And there were a lot of people who considered themselves friends of his who didn't really know about it. I think his really close inner circle knew. Obviously, the Minnesota Wild knew, but there were some other people who dealt with him over the years who didn't know. And so he wanted to keep it quiet. And, not surprisingly, those that he really knew best and trusted did. When I think of a couple of things about Ray Shiro, I think about father-son Stanley Cup champions. He won a Stanley Cup as the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And his dad, Fred, won two Stanley Cups coaching the Philadelphia Flyers. The Flyers were the first expansion team to win the Stanley Cup, and he won them back-to-back with them in 1974 and 75. So I think about that, a Stanley Cup champion family. I also remember, he was the GM in New Jersey when they traded for P.K. Subban from the Predators, and that was at the draft that year. And I remember when I spoke to him after they traded for Subban, I said, "Did you get a chance to speak to Taylor Hall or any of your players?" And he showed me, he said, "Do you want to see what Taylor Hall sent me?" And I was like, "Sure." And he showed me the phone, and he had on it a green checkmark icon. Like, that was, the call didn't even send any words. He just sent the checkmark icon. So we were kind of laughing about that. I remembered that moment very well. And then the other thing I think about, and now that I am a dad, I think about this kind of stuff a lot. A couple of years ago, I think it was at the draft in Nashville, I ran into his sons who were working in the NHL for other teams. And we got introduced to each other, and I chatted with them for a while, and they seemed like really nice kids. And the next day I saw Shiro at the second day of the draft, and I told him, "I met your sons last night. They're really good guys." And he just waxed poetic about them for at least 10 minutes. So, like, I think, it's been a tough week for those of us who knew both Ray Shiro and Greg Millen, the broadcaster I worked with, who died suddenly this week too. But the one thing that they both had in common was, Ray had the two boys that I know of that I met, and Greg had four kids, and they were both, like, if you ever asked them about their families, they would beam about them. So that's the kind of stuff I remember the most.
Elliot, in your latest 32 Thoughts column, you write that this is the time of year where we begin to get a better handle on the potential for change across NHL front offices and benches, I should say. You also mentioned that there are a lot of mixed signals that exist right now. As you begin to monitor these situations, which teams are you keeping an eye on the closest?
Rangers. There's no question about that. I think that that's one that I think a lot of people are wondering, where is that going to go? I think I would mention, Rick Tocchet's situation in Vancouver. The Canucks got eliminated last night when Minnesota beat San Jose in that wild game. The Canucks are out. The Canucks have an option on Tocchet for next season. I was under the impression initially that there was kind of an understanding that he wouldn't coach if they wouldn't hold him to that option if they couldn't work out an extension. The Canucks have indicated that's not the case anymore. They've said that, you know, if he's coaching in the NHL next year, it'll be in Vancouver. I think they were a little annoyed at some of the reports about Philadelphia, but we'll see how that one works out. Buffalo, you know, the Sabres have really had a disappointing year, although they're really putting a nice shine on it right now. They've gotten hot when they at the end of the year, and you know, I think that there are some people who are wondering, okay, does that prevent the owner Terry Pegula from making any potential changes because they're finishing the year strong? I'm not necessarily convinced of that at all, but I know that some people are starting to wonder about that. You know, I think that, you know, Philadelphia's obviously got a coaching situation to make. Boston has had a very disappointing season, I think we're all wondering to see, you know, what the consequences of that could be as well.
You mentioned the New York Rangers. You also had a note in your column about Peter Laviolette. He took some heat after the Rangers.
I thought that you guys would get a kick out of the way I wrote that.
I will tell you this. You wrote, quote, "I've dealt with Laviolette enough over the years to know it's not what he says, but how he says it or how he looks when he says it. The look on his face said it all. I have been on the receiving end of many Peter Laviolette death stares over the years." So no, I know exactly what you're talking about. That paragraph spoke to me, Elliot, in a way I'm not sure how many other people can relate to. But when you talk about the Rangers and Laviolette specifically, what's gone wrong there, you think? Why did the Rangers have the season that they ultimately did?
Oh, I think there's a couple of things, Adam. And yeah, you know what? Like, I wasn't saying that to take a shot at Laviolette. I just think you get to know people. I don't even know if a personal level is the right thing to say, but you just get to know people and who they are and how they act and their mannerisms. And, you know, that quote was floating around social media when he said it. And someone said it to me, I said, look, I got to watch the video because it's not what he says. It's how he says it or what he looks like. And I looked at it. I was like, oh boy. You know, this year, it just never got off on the right foot. Like, some guys struggled, right? Like, Zibanejad wasn't himself for a long time. Kreider hasn't been himself the whole year. I think Fox has been battling injuries. He hasn't looked like himself the whole year. Like, the truest reason, Adam, is that a lot of their core guys just weren't who they can be, right? And if you're like, you need, like, in this league to win, you need goaltending, you need your best players to play like your best players, and you need depth, and you got to be strong down the middle. This year, New York's best players, they weren't good in most cases. Like, not everybody was ungood, but a lot of them were not at their level. And, you know, I think, too, the whole Truba situation, it was unsettled. You know, he knew that they wanted to move him last year. He kept his contractual rights. He wouldn't move, which was his right. He kept his contractual rights. But it was always unsettled. Like, this was going to be his last year in New York. But I think that it just didn't start well. You know, I think Truba really struggled mentally with the fact that he knew the team wanted to move him. I don't think he was the same for a lot of this year. And then there was a point where they sent out a note to all the teams that making Jacob Trouba and Chris Kreider available. And when that got out, it was an earthquake in their dressing room. And, you know, I think the players really struggled with that. Eventually they traded Trouba to Anaheim. Like, they basically told him, if you don't play ball with us, you know, we're going to make life really hard on you. They made it very clear they didn't want him around anymore, and they just didn't recover from that. And, you know, I think at times they've played better, but not consistently enough. And I just think, you know, aside from their guys not playing well, Adam, that whole Truba situation and the way it played out, I just think it was an earthquake in their dressing room that they never recovered from.
We're talking with Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts Podcast. Now, Elliot,
Derek, where you been?
Hey, I've been here,
I've
man.
I've been here the past couple weeks.
I've been here. I've been hearing you. So,
okay, my goodness, my condolences on that.
No, it's always good to hear what you have to say when it comes to hockey or any other sport that we talk about with you. But you did have in your latest column the arguments about Ryan Johansson and his grievance should be heard or will be heard very soon here. How do you expect that to go?
You know, I don't always guess. I'm not a lawyer, Derek. I would say this first. But I would say this. Initially, when that came out, I heard the league was very confident about its case, and the Players Association maybe wasn't as confident. But the more I heard about it and the longer it went on, I heard that the Players Association was more confident in its case. And so, unless they reach a settlement, like I said, the final arguments are supposed to be heard next week. Unless they reach a settlement, I just know the Players Association was very confident in their case, that all due diligence and proper due diligence had been done. So we'll see.
Now, obviously, you know, a monumental, thing was done this week with Ovi breaking Gretzky's record of most goals. And the way he's been honored and the way Gretzky was there and everything else, it just seems like the older guys sort of gravitated just to say congratulations and show how much they appreciate, you know, what he has done, because they understand and know how hard it is to do. But you've covered basketball with the Toronto Raptors being there. You've covered basketball. You've been around it. Why do you think it's so different in basketball, where there's just so much negativity when it comes to, you know, the older generation and the newer generation? It seems like there's a lot of butting of the heads. But you don't see that, or at least I don't see that, and when it comes to hockey. It's like they appreciate just the game as a whole, whether, you know, you play in the 1960s or you're playing now. I think there's a great – and not to say that – The NBA guys don't appreciate that, but it just seems like there's more bickering over here than it is on the other side. Now, I know it's not perfect on hockey. I get it.
No, it's right.
But it's just visible,
Derek,
on one side.
I'm not a big please like my sport guy. Mm-hmm. Like, I like everything. And I'm like you. Like, I love hockey. It's not perfect. I love basketball. It's not perfect. Like, Derek, I'm a Michael Jordan truther. Mm-hmm. I will always be Team Jordan. But that doesn't mean I can't appreciate what LeBron James has done. Like, if you're going to ask me who's number one, I'm always going Jordan. I am never not going Jordan. But that doesn't mean I can't say, hey, that LeBron James, he's had a hell of a career and he's done incredible things. I am astonished by it. And, you know, Derek, I got to tell you, like, the only thing I can really think of is, of all of the four North American team sports, like the biggest ones, basketball is the most individual. Like, it's the one where, mm-hmm. you know, one player makes the greatest, has the greatest effect. I think you could argue quarterback in hockey is probably the closest, or quarterback in football is probably the closest, but there's no sport where one player can make as big a difference, I don't think, as the NBA. And I think because of that, and the teams are smaller and things like that, I think it's a little less, quote-unquote, team than hockey or football or baseball would be. I think that's the reason. I really do. Like, I'll tell you this. When I covered basketball, I covered that first when I was 24 years old. It was one of the greatest things that happened to me because, A, I met a lot of people who I didn't have in common with because of my background and their backgrounds. And you just realize that people are people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if you just show up and you treat people respectfully, everybody finds a way to figure it all out. But the thing I loved about the NBA the most, Derek, is that those players, they will say anything. Like whatever is on their minds, they will tell you. There is no sport. And I don't know if it's just five-on-five, so much man-to-man, like in football, Derek, which of course you played. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, if you did all the time, if a wide receiver beats a cornerback, you can really see it. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the other times, you don't really tell who outduels who on one play. Basketball, it's all out there. It's all out there, man to man. And I think because of that, smaller teams, more obvious who beats who, I just think it leads to a more individual kind of existence. And that's why I think it is. It's the best answer I can give you. But it is so true. Like, I cannot believe the way that the previous generations talk about the current generations. Like, LeBron's done incredible things. Steph Curry might be the greatest shooter ever. And, like, people are like, he couldn't score in the 70s. Like, you don't think that guy would figure out how to score at any generation? Like, there are some hockey fans, young ones in particular, they'll say, oh, Wayne Gretzky wouldn't be as effective today. I'm like, that is insane. Like, he was great because he was great, and he would find a way to be great in any era. Like, I don't understand people who dump on the current athletes. Like, you're telling me that Steph Curry or LeBron James wouldn't be dominant in any generation? I think people are nuts when they say stuff like that.
We're talking to Elliot Friedman, 32 Thoughts. So, Elliot, you're talking Michael Jordan. I'm here in Salt Lake for the first time, where, of course, Michael Jordan broke the hearts of thousands of Utah Jazz fans
twice.
2 years in a row.
Yeah.
I did not order pizza last night for fear of the Michael Jordan story that he told, that he got the food poisoning, which some people buy and some people don't, it seems like.
Yeah, that sounds like
30 for 30.
That sounds like that one could be 50-50, I have to say. Like, even being a big Michael Jordan
We want the
fan,
Willie Donick flu like game. We want the Willie Donick flu
game. The flu game?
Yes.
Yeah, you're not going to get it tonight. Maybe in a future
tonight.
Visit.
Yeah, the flu broadcast. There you go. Yeah.
Well, Elliot, I want to ask you about, you got me thinking with the Rangers story and the locker room, and nobody will be able to quantify for sure how much that upheaval of Trouba and Kreider and all of that stuff and the season going south afterwards. But I wonder, there was a time where I think the pendulum was more old school, where the general managers and the hockey ops people in general would side with the value a guy has to the room, even if the analytics side might say, hey, this guy isn't as productive as he was, and money-wise, he's really not living up to that contract. Now it might – do you feel like it's maybe going the other way, where it's way too much on analytics and value and not enough people stop to say, well, wait a minute, what's the locker room going to be like if we move on from X and Y player?
You know, I think I will say this. I think this. I think analytics have a greater role in hockey than they ever have. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, Willie, because I think you should consider everything. Like, the salary cap is about to go over $100 million in 2 years. If you're not using every possible tool to figure out, what the value of players, I think you're making a mistake. But I will say this, you know, Willie, you look at Washington this year. Why did they sign Chychrun? You know, why are they signing these guys like Thompson and Lindgren? Because they think they have a special chemistry. They see a team, like, you look at that, like, winning makes everything better. And you guys have seen that firsthand this year in Nashville. It's been a really hard year. And is it because you guys have a bunch of bad guys? No, it's not. It's because losing sucks. And you look at Washington and you look at the way that they rallied around Ovechkin and the year they've had, like, that's a good room. They have, so it's not only that they have good players, but they have a good chemistry. And I think you look at Winnipeg, the number one team in the league this year, one of the reasons that they think they've gotten better over the years is a lot of those guys have stayed together. They've built the culture together. They lean on each other. And they demand the most out of each other. Like, they talked about when they got wiped out by Colorado last year, how do we get 10% better? How do we make ourselves 10% better? And I just think that, you know, it's never bad to use every tool you can. But I think that when you have a good chemistry and you have your cornerstone players get along and push each other to be better, that is something you have to protect as much as you possibly can.
Got two more quick ones for you, Elliot. The Predators are now locked in to position 30, or the third best odds of getting the first pick. And now we're diving into all the percentages and probabilities of picks 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. And it's an interesting system that they tweaked a few years ago.
Yeah.
By and large, do you think this system is working? Are general managers satisfied with how the effect has been? On because it's been different things different years, right, on how they've determined who gets the first
pick? I think generally, yes. They tweaked it a couple years ago because they didn't like how many long shots had won. And Detroit just didn't like how many times they were bad and never won. Like, Detroit is probably the team that hates it the most. I'm sure in Nashville you really feel bad for the Detroit Red Wings too, but they're, you know, they hated it the most. I think most people would tell you it's better than out and out tanking. So I would say that this, I would say for the most part, if you ask them, they would say this is probably the best system. I'll also say this, that last week when we talked about the prospects, someone I know was listening and he said, there's one guy you left out in the top four, five. And that was a kid by the name of Anton Frondell, who's a center out of Sweden. I know a couple people who went and saw him a little while ago, and they said that by the draft, you will start to hear that name a lot more if you haven't already. And because he's a center, the Predators have always had a lot of success in Sweden, that's another name that they think would be on Nashville's radar. So I wanted to add that from our conversation last week.
Good to know. Good to know. We're going to learn about these guys a lot between now and the day they actually draft. Last thing, Barry Trotz has said more than once now that free agency with the trade for Michael Bunting and him signed next year, that his attention might be a little bit more in the free agency market on defensemen. They've got a lot of defensemen that I think you could argue are pretty good, 4, 5, 6, maybe, but they could use a top 3 or 4. What is the market right now? Because I realize people can be signed between now and July 1st, but how is that shaping up? Who might be out there that we need to take note of?
Well, I'll say this. Like, Chychrun just came off the board, right? So that was a big one. And there's another defenseman who I think is probably going to come off the board, and that is Gavrikov from L.A. A lot of people are expecting him to sign. So I think that those are probably two of the biggest names that are come down. I would say Neil Pionk, Winnipeg, I know they're trying to sign him. Ivan Provorov, Columbus, they've been trying to sign him. Dmitry Orlov, Carolina, he's just coming off a 2-year deal. I mean, those are some of the names that I think would probably be at the top of a lot of these lists in terms of what is left over. So those are some of the names that, if you're looking for like the top of the heap about what remains, I think those are the names that would make sense. You know, Cody Ceci's a guy. He's not like a number one guy. I think on a good team, he's second pair, maybe third, but he's a stabilizing guy who causes you absolutely no issues. Depending on the numbers there in terms of what he'd be asking for, I could see that being kind of someone that Barry Trotz would like, but you're not looking at him to be a top two guy. That's on a team that you expect to win. That's probably a little bit high, but he's a really solid, low maintenance player. To me, the top two guys were Chychrun and Gavrikov, and I would say that Pionk and Provorov would probably be next. But obviously the two guys are done. I guess the other name I'd say is Aaron Ekblad, who, you know, just had a suspension and is out until the third game of the playoffs because of use of a PED. He's the other guy. And obviously you know, being in Florida, he's not far from you guys. And unless he takes a significant discount in Florida, he's expected to hit the market.
Elliot Freeman, Sportsnet NHL insider, joining us on D-Mace, Vingin and Donick, and presented by Old National Bank. Get old. Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll catch up next week.
Enjoy Utah. Speak to you guys later.
Thanks, all Elliot. Right. Elliot Freeman joining us on the program. 615-737-1025. We will react to what Elliot Freeman had to say coming up next. But before we get there, you can win an exclusive Jason Aldean experience by texting in the keyword Jason, J-A-S-O-N, to 615-737-1025, and you will receive a link to sign up for a chance to win all-inclusive tickets to the Eurostone Club at Bridgestone Arena to see Jason Aldean, plus a chance to win $1,000 cash. D-Mace, Vingin and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingin here with you. Willie out in Salt Lake City with the Predators. They take on the Utah Hockey Club tonight. Puck drop at 8, pregame at 7. Right here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. Willie, if I saw it correctly, Andrew Burnett back with the club today?
Yes, he is back this morning. Was at the morning skate. Got a chance to say hello to him and welcome him back. And they released a statement, and he's been very private about what the family matter, the specifics of the family matter, but I think everybody was glad to see him back doing his thing tonight. And this is the first time any of us, of course, have experienced the Delta Center here. There's the big statue of Stockton Malone outside. So Mace and I got a picture in front of those two guys. You got to do that, right? So now we'll see what the hockey
Absolutely.
Vibe is, but Andrew Burnett described it as a hornet's nest from what he's told. So this is their last home game of the year, so I'd imagine it's going to be rocking tonight.
Where is the Greg Oster tag statue?
You know what? It might be Greg Oster tag was a big dude, right? So you would figure a statue involving Greg Oster tag would stand
big,
out.
Yeah.
I just haven't seen it.
The Byron Mouton statue where he got pushed off by Michael Jordan.
That wasn't a push, y'all.
Oh, yes. That's still a sore spot. Ask Michael Jordan about it. Oh, they did in the Last Dance. He had some pointed opinions. I have to say, Michael Jordan sort of won me over.
Mm-hmm.
The Brian Russell, it was Russell, not Mouton, right? Russell was the guy that...
Why did I say Mouton?
Jordan.
Byron Mouton played for Maryland. I'm sorry. Byron Russell.
Byron Russell. I always, for years, D-Mace, thought it was a push-off. Mm-hmm. But the angles that they showed in the 30 for 30, of course, we had nothing to do but watch this, right? Everybody watched The Last Dance because nobody could go anywhere. It was right in the middle of the shutdown. Like, we look forward to the programming every week. But I have to say, I wasn't rooting for the Bulls back then. And I was like, he pushed off. I was that guy. He pushed him off. He pushed off. But I think maybe there's an argument that he didn't push off.
Hey. I mean,
they didn't call it, so
if they allow it,
well, they didn't call it, that's for sure.
They're not gonna call
it. They let a lot of that stuff go back then, right? Would we agree? It was a much more hand checking, pushing, physical
game,
absolutely. Not even close to what you see today.
I clearly have some unresolved issues about Maryland winning the 2002 national championship. That's why I said Byron Mouton instead of Byron Russell. By the way, you mentioned that statement from Andrew Burnett released from the Predators. It says, quote, "My father experienced an event that required urgent medical attention back home in Ontario, which is the reason why I was away from the team for the past few days. I'm happy to be back with our group beginning today in Utah. I'd like to thank our ownership and Barry Trotz for allowing me to spend this time with my family and thank our entire coaching staff for their help in guiding our team in my absence. My family and I sincerely appreciate the support from everyone in our organization, our players, and our fans." So good to see Andrew Burnett back with the Predators. Now, Willie, you mentioned it with Elliot. You texted it to us this morning. You were crunching the draft lottery number. So correct me if I'm wrong here. The Predators are officially locked into 30th place in the NHL standings?
Yes. They cannot go up or down no matter what happens. Win four, lose four. Other teams win four, lose four. They will be 30th.
So they will have the third best odds of winning the NHL draft lottery. I believe they have an 11.5% chance of winning the lottery and selecting number one in the NHL draft. But you crunched some of the other numbers, and I think the summary here is that the Predators are guaranteed a top five pick in the NHL draft.
Yes, they're guaranteed that. And I knew that. I think a lot of the fans knew that.
Yes.
then I think they have known for weeks that 30th was the likely spot.
Mm-hmm.
What I had not really realized until I saw this tweeted out by Max Hirsch, who went to one of your favorite websites, Adam.
Tankathon.com.
Yes,
did you hear
absolutely.
Barry Trotz allege that he has never heard of Tankathon.com with Jared the other day?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I believe it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I believe it. We love Tankathon at this.
Okay, Barry.
At this station.
I believe Barry on that one. I think you never want to be associated with anything that would associate with you with tanking. But the tanking is the important thing, right? Of
mm-hmm.
how we got to the current system that's there right now, because some people like it. As you heard Elliot say, some people are really not crazy about it, because what it does, it's designed so that if you just say, well, let's lose the rest of our games, like the famous example you've pointed out earlier this season, Adam, where the Sabres fans were cheering against their team. They would cheer when the other team would score because they wanted to get the first pick. The year that Connor McDavid was coming out, they had to, quote, settle for Jack Eichel. But back then, it was just pretty simple. You finish last, you get the first pick, like the NFL does. The NFL does not have a lottery, right? So on that final Sunday, everybody was kind of saying, hey, they put Will Levis back in the game. Hey, Joe Milton's actually leading the Patriots to a victory.
Remember,
this is working out pretty well.
Tankathon.com. Remember, Tankathon.com crashed early that day because people were right. rushing to the site after the Patriots won, the Titans lost, everything like that.
Yes. And so I think some would argue that the lottery is a good thing. But the NHL came up with this so because they felt that was starting to happen with some teams. They were tanking. So I was surprised, right? I knew that the Predators would have an 11.5% chance of picking first. I didn't know the exact probabilities of the other four spots, and now we have that locked in. So it might surprise people to know what those are. They have 11.5 of picking first. Now, you think about it. You got 100 different ways something can go. Let's just say you had 100 ping pong balls in there, which is not how they do it, by the way. There are only 14 ping pong balls. Did you guys know that?
I don't think I did.
Mm-mm.
There are 14 ping pong balls, and you pick up a combination of four, and that combination of four numbers dictates who gets the spot. So it's not as simple as just reaching into the jar or, you know, whatever those machines are that suck up the ping pong ball up into the thing. But 11.5 is a good chance. It's the third best odds, but there's a lot of teams in there. And so you have an 88.5% chance of not getting the first pick. They have an 11.2% chance of getting the second pick because you draw for the first pick, then you draw for the second pick. Now, this is where I really got thrown off, and I started questioning myself. I was like, did you just not pay any attention in the probability and statistics course at Vanderbilt? And I had to answer myself back in the mirror, no, you weren't paying very much attention in that class.
Rocks for jocks, baby. Rocks for jocks.
Yes, I better in rocks for jocks. And I avoided the math department after that class for the rest of my career. I took the minimum amount of math classes. But they only have a 7.8% chance of staying with the third pick, even though that is where they're slotted, right? Now, the chances of the fourth pick, I don't know if you guys have looked at this. They have nearly a 40% chance of ending up picking fourth, the highest probability of any of the five spots. And then for the fifth pick, which is the lowest they could possibly pick, it's almost 30%, 29.8%.
Hmm.
Now, does that surprise you a little bit? It surprised me.
You're asking the wrong guy when it comes to math.
It
you
just surprised
no
me.
Math on the show?
It surprises me that you put all that together, okay?
I didn't put
to
it together.
To then ask us if we felt surprised.
I've told you this before. I was so bad at math that my freshman year in college, I had to repeat 11th grade math.
There you go.
That's how bad at math I was. So
hey, we all got our strengths. We all got our weaknesses.
Don't ask me to crunch the numbers.
Okay? But we got them.
But Max went to the Tankathon, and they've got this huge chart because it doesn't just focus on the Predators. It's got all of the teams mm-hmm. in there. And some of those spots can still change between now and the end of the season. But since the Predators were locked in, he deciphered the chart, And the first thing I did this morning is I texted him. I was like, how in the world are their lowest chances of staying third when they're going to finish 30th? Shouldn't that mean the most likely place to finish is third? But that's not – the answer is no, because what they did is they wanted the teams that didn't finish in the playoffs to have a shot at the first pick. And while they don't really have a high shot, there's a lot of teams in that boat, right? Because they want to encourage those teams to not tank when you're out of it. Keep winning, and we're still going to give you a shot at the first and the second pick. So there's a bunch of teams in there that could leapfrog. Hopefully they don't. But, you know, there is a realistic shot at fourth or fifth. In fact, those are the highest probabilities. The highest is that they would finish with the fourth pick. And the second highest is that they would finish with the fifth pick. Now, that surprised me. It had me questioning everything. But I'm glad to know that Elliott says that the fifth best prospect or whatever is rising up, because that's really what you're looking at. What's the worst case scenario? You'd pick fifth instead of third, second, first.
615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. Willie Dunick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, the game. D-Mace Vingan and Dunick, 1025-1063, the game. Willie Dunick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you. Predators are back in action tonight, kicking off their final road trip of the season in Utah against the Utah Hockey Club. Puck drop at 8, pregame at 7, right here on 1025-1063, the game. Derek, Andrew from Dover on our text line says, yes. D-Mace, how about that game from Luka? What a return to Dallas last night. Luka Doncic, by the way, 45 points in his first game in Dallas. Lakers win 112-97.
Luka had on those special shoes last night, boy. Luka came out and pulled those shoes straight out the box and said, let's go. Because, man, oh, man, the minute he stepped on that court, boy, after the presentation, you know, that Dallas gave him, which was great, he came out on the court. He was straight on revenge mode. That's what he, like that mode, like five or six modes in a game, when you're playing Mortal Kombat or something, you get that last mode where it's going to be hard to get out the first round. That's that mode that Luka was on, because he was – I mean, he had 31 at half?
I believe he had 31 at halftime.
Now, he ended up with 45, which is like, he should have had more.
But I believe the over-under for points was set at 30 and a half, which he cleared at halftime.
Oh, he cleared it. He was on a mission last night, man. So much so, you were hearing Fire Nico chant in the arena.
This is what's so fascinating to me, gentlemen, and I would love for your opinion on this. I was reading a story on ESPN.com, and the reporter talked to a fan outside of the arena, and that fan said, quote, for the rest of Luka's career, this is still going to be a home game to him, because I feel like we're going to be cheering for him when we should be cheering for the Mavs. Is there an example where, you know, a player gets traded, we know the reaction in Dallas. I mean, it was like a funeral scene when the Mavericks traded Luka Doncic to the Lakers. I can't recall off the top of my head another example that is similar to this, where a player gets traded from a team and he is still held in such high esteem by the fan base when he returns. Willie, do you have any thoughts on this? Any ones that come to mind?
Well, I understood why it happened, and you could argue that it was an effective trade, but I think Shea Weber has some of that for the Predators. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Just the reverence? Mm-hmm.
I would say that. I don't recall, however, Predators fans, you know, laying flowers outside of Bridgestone Arena, and I believe a couple of Mavericks fans even did they carried a casket or something outside arena. You know, I don't remember.
That's pretty extreme.
It's an incredible story.
Yeah, I haven't.
I would say that, you know, it wasn't an in-season trade, and so in-season is probably a different level of frustration and craziness. I would say when the Mets traded Tom Seaver, this is going back a ways.
By the way, you should note that Teron Davenport is in the studio. He's got his Mets hat. Mm-hmm. He's got his Mets sweats. He's got his blue and orange Nikes.
I would not expect anything different. Pretty decent start for the Mets. But when they traded the franchise, Tom Seaver, at midnight of the trade deadline, I think it was 1977. I was too young to really remember that. But when you go back through Mets history, that's a moment that stung big time. And that was – that had a lot of reverberations.
What about 1990 different time when Strawberry and different left era. For the Dodgers?
Say that one again?
1990 when Darryl Strawberry left for the Dodgers?
Yeah, and that was a free agency, right? So that was his choice. I think the trading is where you can get mad. You could get mad at the organization, but not at the player, right? Isn't that kind of what's happening with Luka?
Was Carmelo Anthony like that when he left Denver?
Yeah, when he went to New York.
Yeah, and they still loved him in Denver because it was like they didn't see it as him.
I don't know.
They saw it more so as the management.
But did either of you see this quote from Jason Kidd before the game? He was asked about how he would address Mavs fans who feel like there is no hope without Luka. Mm-hmm. And he said, quote, "Trades happen. Some are comparing it to Babe Ruth, which is kind of cool." Not sure you want to be compared to that side of the Babe Ruth trade.
No.
I don't think Jason Kidd quite understood what he was being asked.
Until they get either one or two things are going to have to happen. Either they're going to have to win a championship before the Lakers do, or before Luka does, or they're going to have to fire Nico. One of the two. That's the only way I think. And then Dallas fans may not still get over it. Even if they win a championship or even if you fire the GM, they still may not get over it. Because, again, how many times do you see a trade like of that magnitude out of just nowhere? It was just like this clandestine meeting that they had, and they just did it under the shade of the night, and all of a sudden everybody woke up to Luka got traded.
That's fairly unique about that trade, that it was not brewing for a while. Technically, Babe Ruth was sold and not traded, right?
Okay, fair enough.
If we're being technical,
yes.
But the other one that comes to mind, you know, Wayne Gretzky was traded, but there's a whole 30 for 30 on the build up to that, right? And that was shocking. And they've never forgiven the guy that did it in Edmonton. But what was weird is, you know, you mentioned even if they win a championship without him, the Oilers actually won a championship 2 years after they traded Gretzky. Isn't that crazy? Looking back, that's a pretty phenomenal feat. Mark Messier, and they had a lot of great players still on that squad. But they won the Stanley Cup without Gretzky, even though that was a trade that had enormous
Did Shaq get traded, like or did he just sign – Orlando just wasn't going to sign him back because they were going with Penny? Or did he get
Who?
Traded?
Shaquille O'Neal from Orlando.
Oh, he left. No, he left him high and dry in the free agent market. That was a stunner. So that was on Shaq. That wasn't on the – now, you could fault management for not finding a way to
sign him.
Getting him to agree to stay, but I think he saw the glitz and glitter of L.A. and went west.
That'll do it for us today. Predators back in action tonight against the Utah Hockey Club. Puck drop at 8, pregame at 7. So 1 hour later, puck drop at 8, pregame at 7, right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Stillman and Company coming up next.
Be love, love on your people. Have a blessed, safe, wonderful Thursday. Peace. Do-do-do. Why do I...